Here, this is a meeting of Triumph Gulf Coast Board of Directors. We are very grateful for the hospitality and friendship of our friends at the Gulf Coast State College, Dr. Holdenack, as president, and the members of the Board of Trustees have been very gracious to allow us to be here today. And Al McCambry is here representing the college, and we would be delighted to have any comments that you might like to make in welcoming Triumph Gulf Coast to your campus.
Just briefly, I'm Chairman Gates and the remaining board members for Triumph Gulf Coast and the staff of Triumph Gulf Coast welcome the Gulf Coast State College, Gulf Franklin campus. We realize that this is a tremendous opportunity. We do not, we are jealous of the fact that you guys get to vet the programs that are going to be proposed to you, and there's a huge opportunity to support all of the eight counties from an economic recovery standpoint. It is going to be an arduous task. We are very excited about some of the potential and the opportunities for economic growth, not only in this county, but the remaining seven counties as well. And on behalf of Dr. Holdenack, president of Gulf Coast State College, welcome to the Gulf Franklin campus. And I bid you welcome from a hospitality standpoint and a comfort break standpoint. If you have during the during that rest period, the facilities are in Building A, which is right across the breezeway there. So on that note, thank you again for allowing us to host this, and enjoy the rest of the day.
Thank you so much, Al. We appreciate it. And we're joined as well today by Commissioner McCrone, who is here. He is a Gulf County commissioner, and we appreciate the chance to be back in Gulf County. Commissioner, did you have any wisdom you'd like to impart before we commence firing today?
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you for coming to Gulf Coast today, and Board of County Commissioner, welcome y'all to Gulf County.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. We have two excused absences today. Stephen Riggs is excused because of an urgent, unexpected business commitment that he could not forestall. And Speaker Benz, we have very good news. He's out of the hospital. He's back in Panama City. He had a medical appointment today that got moved later in the day. Otherwise, he had intended on being with us. But his medical appointment got shifted during the day, but he's doing much, much better. He sends his greetings, and all of us are extraordinarily grateful for his recovery, and we expect to have him back in full steam and on all cylinders very, very soon. Speaker Benz texted me this morning to remind me that 175 years ago today, the state of Florida was born. And it was born here. 2.5 miles from where we're sitting, a group of folks got together and created the first constitution for the state of Florida. And I came a little bit early today so that I could go down and see the monument, which is built there, the Centennial Hall, which was built to commemorate the founding of Florida and our first Constitution. So it's a historic day for Florida, and hopefully we'll be able to do some small part in building a stronger future for the state that was begun here in Northwest Florida in Port St. Joe 175 years ago today. Would you please call the roll, Ms. Kelton?
Mr. Baer.
Here.
Dr. Dana.
Here.
Chair Gates.
Here.
Mr. Lee.
Here.
Mr. Terry.
Here.
Quorum present, Mr. Chair.
Quorum present. The meeting is called to order. We'll follow the agenda for the meeting, copies of which all board members have, and I believe it's available to all of the members of the public who were kind enough to come and spend time with us today. First of all, we have the review and approval of the January 28th, 2020 meeting minutes. Those minutes were provided to you prior to the meeting for your review. Are there any corrections, additions, or deletions from those minutes by any board member? If not, show them adopted.
Move to approve.
Second.
Showed adopted. Let's go to the treasurer's report next. And our treasurer, Mr. Riggs, is not here, but our assistant treasurer, Mr. Lee, this is his maiden voyage as assistant treasurer. So make no mistakes, sir.
And in an effort to make no mistakes, I have asked our accountant firm, Tipton Marler Garner, to assist us today with the presentation of the financials. So I'll turn it over to Tipton Marler.
You'll see in your financial statements for January the statement of financial position, which is the balance sheet, very similar to what it has been, with approximately $360 million in assets. On the statements of activity, you see same thing here that we have been seeing, pretty consistent, with about $60,000 in expenses, and we did not disperse any funds to any of our grantees this month.
Which report were you reading from?
January.
Did you have a question or a comment, Dr. Dana?
I didn't know which one I was looking at.
Okay. Oh, yeah, the financial statements.
All right. And disbursements to grantees simply weren't scheduled this month.
Correct.
And so consequently none were made. But
we have made some since.
But we have made, okay. And we have we have your projection here, the schedule of funding, so that we know what our commitments are going forward and available funds going forward for members to review and have as a reference. Are there any questions? Are there any comments? Any objections? Does any member object? If not, show it adopted. Ms. Skelton, can we move to a report from you having to do with the legislature, which is in session, and then after that we'll go to the archiving process?
Yes, sir. As of this morning, both the House and the Senate have indicated that session's going to be extended, or maybe extended, and the issue outstanding is the budget, and I would assume that they would extend just for the sole purpose of doing the budget, but we don't know any of that yet. The bill that recreates the trust fund for Triumph Gulf Coast has passed the House, was sent to the Senate, and currently resides in the Senate Appropriations Committee. Until there's some movement, that is where it will remain. And that basically is the report as it relates to Triumph.
And so that members and also the public has an understanding, the consequences of that bill, either moving or not moving, are what?
The trust fund recreation bill would be to recreate the trust fund this year, but the statutory ending in the current statute is not until June the 30th of 2021. So if the bill does not pass this year, it is not critical.
Okay. And the trust fund obviously relates to those funds which are drawing interest.
Correct. Every month we are required by statute to deposit our interest money into that trust fund, and currently the trust fund is just sitting there. The House budget is using $8 million of that trust fund to pay for a housing or a small business loan program for Northwest Florida. The Senate budget used general revenue for that same amount, and so that, of course, is a conference issue that has to still be resolved.
Okay. Any questions or comments on that matter? If not, we have had, as Ms. Henderson reminds us at each meeting, a backlog of pre-applications from entities who have chosen not to go forward with a full application. And as a consequence, we're carrying a large number of pre-apps upon which there has been no action. And we understand that staff has a recommendation as to how we might describe those and carry those in our records.
Yes, sir. Based on conversations that staff has had with the chair, we went back and looked at our process on the website, and we have now three different categories of proposals on the website. They're current proposals, those that have not had action taken but are eligible for action to be taken. There are archived proposals. Those are proposals that either were deemed not to be eligible or received a score of C or lower. And then there are the grant award, active grant awards. And what staff would like to propose is that to be able to take some of those items that are on the current list, which are pre-applications, that have been sitting there for over 1 year, and the applicant has not proceeded with our process, has not put in an application. We would like to be able to archive all of the projects that are pre-applications that are older than 1 year, and we would like to be able to do that on a continuous rolling basis. As they time out at a year, they would be moved to the archived file. If for some reason the person then comes back and puts in an application, they can be moved back to the current file. But for our purposes and for the public's ease of use of the website, it's confusing to see 220 something pre-applications there, and a lot of them don't have activity. But it's not because Triumph hasn't done anything, it's because the applicant has not followed through the process. So we would like a motion to be allowed to archive pre-applications that do not have applications that are older than 1 year.
Before we take a motion, are there any questions or comments or objections to that? If not, is there a motion to adopt staff's recommendation?
Second.
Moved by Mr. Bear, seconded by Dr. Dana. Is there debate, discussion? Does any member object? Showed adopted. Now let's move to the next item on the agenda, the legal report by our general counsel, Scott Remington. Mr. Remington, you are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first item on the legal report this month is a review and potential approval of a grant award agreement for project number 213, which is Florida's Great Northwest Inc. I can confirm that the statutory publication of the grant award agreement took place, and the grant award agreement has been reviewed by staff. This specific grant award agreement is different than most of the grant award agreements, perhaps all the grant award agreements we have approved thus far, in that it does not have a job creation component. This is a marketing and research grant. The goal of the grant is to provide partial funding to implement a research and marketing agenda targeted at diversification, enhancement, and recovery of the 8 disproportionately affected counties identified in the Triumph Gulf Coast Trust Fund enabling statute. The project has 2 main components. One is research, analysis, and vendor management. The other one is marketing and business development. The total amount of the grant requested is $440,000. The total matching funds are $470,000 for a total project value of $910,000. Even though there aren't job creation requirements, there are clawback requirements. The clawback requirements in this instance are based on deliverables from Florida's Great Northwest. So, for instance, once Florida's Great Northwest delivers to us a study and demand analysis, they will be entitled to a grant award funding for that portion of the project. And there are several different components over multiple years of research, studies, and advertising. If the board has specific questions about those elements, I'd ask that the economic director or the program administrator be recognized to explain those.
Dr. Harper, maybe you could kick us off by articulating what the deliverables will be from this project and what the value of those deliverables would be for the economic diversification of Northwest Florida.
Thank you, Chairman. Mr. Remington said, there are several deliverables, and in focusing on the output of the research that will be delivered by Florida's Great Northwest, this is research that we critically need to assess region-specific wages to be paid for particular occupational training. What's the wage, the occupations, what's the demand going forward? And so the supply and demand analysis that will be done under this contract will give us the basis to both take advantage of existing forecasts of the labor market and what programs we ought to be funding for training, career and technical education, as well as incorporate innovations that Triumph itself has caused in the region. We're seeing a particular uptick now in training for airframe and power plant technicians, for example, and that's based on some things that would not typically be considered in industry-wide forecasts for this area. So there's the research will be beneficial in helping us determine for our region what the occupational forecasts are that are most of interest to the board. Then the output from this project will be used for marketing purposes, because all of the economic development professionals across the 8-county Triumph region really need to be able to have the best estimates, credible analysis-based estimates of what the labor force is going to look like over the coming years, and the marketing that can be done there by Florida's Great Northwest itself, we anticipate will help recruit, help bring publicity to the fact that Triumph offers unique opportunities that other parts of the state don't enjoy in terms of funding economic development activities. And so those aspects of the project really go hand in hand. Now, to calculate the return on investment to Triumph, we turn to the program implemented by the Florida legislature in 2013, which applies a common yardstick across all of the state's economic development incentives. And in that legislation, the state requires that the Florida Legislative Office of Economic and Demographic Research, on a three-year rotating basis, use a consistent set of assumptions and measures to calculate the return on investment to the state, measured in terms of tax revenue per dollar expended by the state of each of the economic development programs. Given that this project that we are embarked on, the Triumph Gulf Coast, looks a lot like the Quick Action Closing Fund in its structure and performance, we chose to use as an independent measure, not specifically constructed for this purposes, but illustrative of the ROI we could expect from Triumph projects. We use the ROI calculated by EDR on the Quick Action Closing Fund, and then to meet the stated preferences of the Triumph Board, we then made a translation from dollars of state tax revenue collected versus dollars expended by the states. We then translated that into increased dollars of personal income to families in the 8-county region versus Triumph dollars expected. And under that measure, we can expect that the Florida's Great Northwest agreement should lead the Triumph Board to expect a return per dollar of Triumph expenditure measured as increases in family income, appropriately discounted, $24.7 in additional income per dollar of Triumph expenditure, which is very competitive with other Triumph awards.
Are there questions, comments, or any discussion about this project? We'll take public comment. Any member of the public wish to speak on this project, either for it, against it, or simply providing information that you think the board should have before it votes? Any member of the public? Final call for any debate or discussion by board members. If not, please call the roll. I'm sorry. We'll take a motion to approve Proposal 213, Florida's Great Northwest. Is there such a motion? Motion by Mr. Baer. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Terry. Is there a debate or discussion? If not, now call the roll.
Yes, sir. Mr. Baer.
Yes.
Dr. Dana.
Yes.
Chair Gates.
Yes.
Mr. Lee.
Yes.
Mr. Terry.
Yes.
Motion passes.
Showed adopted. And now, Mr. Remington, if you would move on to the Proposal 98.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Proposal number 98 is a previously approved grant award agreement between Triumph Gulf Coast and the Walton County Sheriff's Office. This is a project that we are asking the board to consider an amendment to the agreement. It doesn't change the project in any way. It doesn't change the amount of funding in any way, but changes the manner in which the funds are distributed. So it just changes the distribution schedule, literally not the amounts being distributed on the schedule, but the timing of the distributions to the Sheriff's Department.
And what is that change? What's the material difference?
The material difference, I'd ask you to, Ms. Henderson can probably better explain the differences.
Ms. Henderson, could you help us with that, please?
Sure, and then I'll also let the grantee fill in the details.
All right.
This was another project that following Hurricane Michael saw some increases in costs related to construction activities, and they are going to take on the additional costs, but that does cause the budget to go up, so we need to bring it back to you over that percent. One of the items that they are going to do is actually reduce one of the welding classrooms based on the number of the enrollment numbers and the projected enrollment numbers. It's been determined that they may not need such a large classroom, so this will allow them to reduce that and use those funds in another portion of the project where costs have increased, and Dr. Fuller's agreed that it did not have a negative impact on enrollment or our outcomes for the project. There's also, they were able to accept, this will allow them to accept donations of some items without reducing the cost of our award, again, so they can shift some funds around in their categories and still meet the goals of the grant without increasing the Triumph commitment.
Did the applicant have any comment you care to make, please? And for the record, if you could identify yourself, we're delighted you're here.
Thank you. My name is Minette Bruce, and I'm the CFO at the Walton County Sheriff's Office. One of the things that we are doing also is we are buying some used equipment, which we figure for a training purpose. We don't need brand new equipment, which has reduced that category that allowed us to cover some of the cost overruns on the actual driving pad construction.
Are there any questions for the applicant or for Ms. Henderson or counsel? Yes, sir, Mr. Lee.
No, I just want to compliment the applicant for working very hard to keep it within budget and, you know, to exploring the use of used equipment in this.
Thank you.
So thank you.
We appreciate your consideration.
Not at all. Any other comments or questions? All right. Is there any public comment aside from what we've heard from the sheriff's office? Is there any public comment? Anyone opposing this project or being in favor of it or just providing information you think we should know about? Any public comment? If not, a motion would be in order to adopt the amended proposal 98.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Lee. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Dr. Dana. Is there a debate? Is there a discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Mr. Terry?
Yes.
Mr. Lee?
Yes.
Chair Gates?
Yes.
Dr. Dana?
Yes.
Mr. Bear?
Yes.
Showed adopted. And now, Mr. Remington, if you would give us an update on our negotiations with the City of Panama City and the Eastern Shipbuilding Group regarding Proposal 185. We know this is a project that we have approved, but it's a project that has been subject to some change from some external forces. And if you could give us an update as to where we stand with that applicant, we'd be grateful.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Harper and I have had several discussions with Eastern Shipbuilding, and we have begun the process of exchanging some draft documents to amend the grant award agreement to reflect the changes in the master agreement between Eastern Shipbuilding and the United States Coast Guard that are necessitated by the changes to the Coast Guard contract for the offshore patrol cutters. We were hoping to be in a position to deliver an agreement to you today. Timing wise, the Eastern Shipbuilding in Panama City are waiting on some additional information from the Coast Guard on how the contracts will be let. The good news is we think we're in a good shape on the negotiations. We think on some of our the points that we're not willing to flex on, they're in agreement with. It's just a function of making sure that we get the agreement consistent with what the federal government is going to make available to Eastern in terms of rebids or future bids for additional cutters. As you know, the original grant award agreement was designed to put Eastern in a position and the Panama City in a position to where they could compete for more cutters. Now that they have fewer guaranteed cutters, they want to make sure that they're in a good position to compete for those additional cutters that will be bid out by the Coast Guard. That timeline, we believe, will be better established and better known between now and Triumph's next meeting, allowing us to come up with a more accurate document that reflects where that project actually exists. We have made some additional progress between the city and Eastern in that since the last meeting, the city delivered to us executed copies of an easement agreement, a shipbuilding infrastructure lease agreement, and a comprehensive agreement for shipbuilding infrastructure development. If you remember, the structure of this deal required that Eastern lease land from the city, that the city had an easement over in order to make sure that the project was constructed on public property. So the documents that will allow that to happen have now been executed and delivered to us. So once again, I apologize for the delay, but we expect to be in a position by our next meeting to hopefully have a proposed amendment to the grant award agreement before the board for discussion.
Questions by board members? Questions or comments? Mr. Lee, did you have something, sir?
Okay.
I have one question. The necessity for an amendment to the contract arises out of the federal government's own procurement changes. My question is there anything with respect to our negotiations with the city or with Eastern Shipbuilding that is holding up them going forward with any aspect of the project?
Not that it, no, sir. There's nothing that's holding us up other than the fact that until we get this amendment done, our funds won't be available for their use. So no Triumph money is available for them to utilize towards construction or part of their progress until we get these changes nailed down.
All right.
And I can tell you that they at least have expressed to us a desire to get started quickly because of the problems with shipping materials out of China and coronavirus have the potential to put them behind schedule and over budget. So they are motivated to get this done.
So it behooves the city and Eastern Shipbuilding to move forward with whatever adjustments or amendments are necessary.
Yes, sir. And they've assured us and that they've assured the board in prior meetings that they don't expect their job creation numbers to change, which is one of the things that we've tried to maintain and make sure they knew was very important to the board.
Well, this is a project very important to not just Bay County, but to our whole area. And I would ask the board's indulgence if we are in a position in a week from now or 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now to deal with this contract adjustment, I would ask your permission and your indulgence to have either a telephone meeting or a special call meeting or something, because I don't want us to be the reason that we have 1 day's delay in getting these jobs in Bay County. Would there be any objection to that by any member? All right.
The only issue that I would raise is that we will need 14 days notice to publish an amendment of the contract before the meeting.
Right.
But I think we're close to 60 days till our next meeting. So there's still ample time if it's done in the interim to do both.
Well, if and as you and Mr. Harrison and the other players get everything the way you need it to be, please let us know as soon as possible. And I hear no objection here to a telephonic meeting if necessary to take up that one item. We want to be the reason it moves forward. We never want to be the reason that it's delayed.
Yes, sir. I'll make sure I deliver that message.
Any other questions or comments on this matter? If not, Ms. Henderson, you are up for the program administrator's report and appreciate any input that you may have, ma'am.
Good afternoon. My report is going to be slightly longer than usual. We have been working on quite a few things in the last few weeks, but I'll start with our regular report. As of Monday, February 24th, you have received 222 pre-applications or applications. The Hurricane Michael Fast Track Construction Program does not require pre-application. So there's 222, totaling $1.7 billion. And that is part of what has brought up Susan's discussion earlier today on how to reorganize the intake of applications and pre-applications. You have received 85 applications totaling $635 million, or over $635 million, and you have awarded over $240 million to 29 projects, or moving forward with those. Some of the new applications that were received since the last board meeting include quite a few workforce education projects that Dr. Fuller is going to discuss in a few moments. And four of those are the Fast Track Hurricane Michael Skilled Labor Recovery Fund requests. There was a great response from the technical colleges and school districts in the Triumph County region. And there are four tech schools that have requested to participate. The response was exceeded expectations. And again, I'll let Dr. Fuller get into that in more detail, but the communities are very excited about the opportunity to work on this project with you. Additionally, a number of us attended the Gulf Power Symposium last week, and one of the highlights was Dr. Harper presenting with one of our projects with ST. About the working with Triumph and working with the Escambia community in Pensacola to bring such a large project forward. And it really gave those in the room an opportunity to understand how to partner with Triumph and how to bring a lot of partners together, especially on the big projects. Excuse me. Another highlight was the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force, John Henderson, spoke. And he highlighted... The Air Force's continued focus on education facilities surrounding their bases. They will be putting out a list ranking all of the schools within the school district around every Air Force base, and so it'll be interesting to see where our schools fall. But he also shared that when they were narrowing down where to put a mission, they would take into consideration things such as charter schools and school choice for the communities that had such opportunities. So that was a positive for Florida and Northwest Florida with our school choice and charter school programs. Additionally, he highlighted military spouses are going to be, and their career paths are going to be another significant component when they make basing decisions in the future. And Dr. Fuller and I had actually recently spoken with the regional career sources about how to assist military spouses in uptraining and getting certifications to move them forward in their careers. So that's something we look forward to continuing to work with them on and bringing forward to you that meets the expectations of the Air Force, which is a very important stakeholder in the Triumph region. Additionally, as we discussed, the Eastern Shipbuilding proposal amendment that may come back in April or before April, at our April board meeting, we also expect to bring you some amendments for our rural school districts. They were some of our very first Triumph applications and proposals and agreements, and so we're working with them. They'll be staying within their budgets, but there'll be some budget amendments to account for the implementation of the projects and where they are today, and one we anticipate even a cost savings. Randy Lewis will be attending this week, I believe tomorrow, the Okaloosa County pre-bid meeting for our water sewer project for Shoal River Ranch. The county has decided to bid on it themselves, and so he will be attending that pre-bid meeting to, as requested by you at your last meeting, to observe on behalf of Triumph. A little bit more. I apologize. I know this is a long report today. There was one more item. Also, in April at our next board meeting, we will have a few more annual reports, including the report from FSU and the Appalachia Bay Systems Institute program. So we look forward to bringing you updates on that program, which will include significant grants that they've received that we'll be able to account for at that time. Questions?
Questions from Ms. Henderson. Yes, sir, Mr. Lee.
I'd just like to add to the comments of Ms. Henderson surrounding the meeting with the Undersecretary for the Air Force, John Henderson, as it pertains to the evaluation of our schools. Yes, it will be ranked as, school surrounding bases, And I think there's some additional questions that we had that came out of that conversation. But also the importance of the Gulf Test Range out over the Gulf and the importance of that to all of our military installations along Florida's Gulf Coast and the protection of that. I know that we are coming upon that for renewal. I think the House has already approved it, and hopefully the Senate will take that up in Washington to approve the protection of the Gulf Test Range. And that is certainly one of the major factors that factored into them rebuilding Tyndall and the attractiveness of Tyndall Air Force Base to the military. So I think that I just wanted to stress that to our team here today, that we have so many, and many of our projects are also tied to military installations, that it's very important that we speak out and protect this valuable asset that we have sitting just a few miles off of our shores here, that is bringing so much industry and so much economic drivers to our military installations.
Thank you very much. Any further comments on any of the issues raised by Ms. Henderson's report? Mr. Terry, did you have something, sir?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Baer? Dr. Dana? All right. Thank you very much. A motion would be in order to receive and approve Ms. Henderson's report. Is there such a motion?
So moved.
Moved by Dr. Dana, seconded by Mr. Baer. Is there debate, discussion? If not, show to adopt it. Let's move to the Economic Advisor's report and recommendations. And here we have an extensive series of proposals. But in order to sort of set context for those proposals, and also I think as an appropriate and perfect segue from what Mr. Lee was talking about in terms of the Secretary of the Air Force's comments, ask Dr. Fuller if he would give us an update on the aviation and aerospace sector in Northwest Florida. One of the things that we committed ourselves to when we started this process with Triumph Gulf Coast was that we would not try to superimpose our ideas about what the Northwest Florida economy should look like on the economy. Rather, we would follow the needs of the economy, and we would try to build on those needs as they emerge organically and as they emerge from the economic forces that are affecting our region. And certainly the aerospace and aviation sector has, at least in my view, been a perfect example of that, where before it was sort of in a list of things that we thought were going to be important, and now turns out to be at the top or very near the top of that list as we look at the economic diversification of Northwest Florida. Dr. Fuller.
Thank you, Chair. I think that couldn't be a better summary than looking at the future of where we are now compared to where we were 12 to 15 months ago when this process started. It's kind of started revealing itself that aviation, space, unmanned aviation is becoming a dominant function of our workforce area, and all the subset jobs that go along with that, including manufacturing, research, support, financial institutions, all the pieces it takes to make that work. I want to give you a snapshot of what the aviation industry looks like right now in America. According to Boeing and FAA, we need 212,000 pilots in the next 20 years. That's 10,000 pilots a year beginning last year. We need 193,000 technicians, that's 9,600 a year beginning last year. Let me pause for a moment. Florida, which is one of the top three states in the nation producing aviation trained employees and supporting commerce, produced 800 last year in the technician field. As you look at the gap between and our responsibilities we have right now to the aviation companies who've contracted with us, we got a lot of work ahead of us. And I think the three proposals you hear about today will start addressing that very clearly. I think the solution has to be regional, and I think the proposals coming forward this week and in a month will show you a regional picture to try to exceed what we think is the projections for that area. If you add the next box, cabin crews, 176,000 over the next 20 years. and support crews and training for those, which are all under FAA. The interesting thing about these numbers, you're talking about the second most regulated industry in America. Aviation sits right behind nuclear energy. So when you start talking about launching a program, you just don't go get a syllabus for a class, have somebody approve it, and then start the class. The FAA has to approve the facility. They have to approve. They literally tell you what kind of equipment goes in the building. They come by and supervise the operation four times minimum a year, unannounced, to be sure you're on task and in compliance with all their rules. These are big numbers, so just to be sure, I didn't get too far ahead with using the numbers, and not my habit is to manage it by walking around. I went to see two of these sites that are producing these trained FAA workers right now, and they're telling us that they're doing 97% placement, and the only placements they're not making are because kids chose to go get a private commercial license. They liked aviation so much they moved forward. They're also telling me that this is just the tip, that it's very hard to gear up for meeting these numbers in a very heavily regulated field. So our recommendations going forward today, when we talk about these three projects, we kind of have two choices. We can take what we have, which are some very good projects right now that are operational, producing FAA-certified employees, and build and expand those because they've already been FAA-approved. We can build off the approval. We can expand the programs. Or we can start looking a little bit down the road about what kind of, I don't want to use the word new construction, what kind of major renovations we can do to structures to accommodate a growth in production. But and the final point I'd like to make to the chair and the board is we need to look at producing private pilots. It needs to be part of the whole process. It shouldn't be a one-dimensional work that we do. I think we have to look at the end game. As I visited some of these classrooms, when these kids get involved, they start seeing another step that this is great, but I found out more about aviation. So moving into the private pilot or commercial pilot field is interesting to them, something they really look forward to. So let's look at Florida real quick. Florida is a top three aviation state, not only in industry, but we have 2,000 aviation businesses. We have $6.8 billion in annual aviation exports, including training. We have 20 commercial airport centers. We have two spaceports. We have 20 major military installations. And if my numbers are correct, 8 of those are located in our Triumph Zone. Mm-hmm. And I, to comment to your point, primarily because of our Gulf Range. We have 120 private use airports. And for those of you who live in the Panhandle, you've passed some of these. And Apalachicola, was that where we went? Bob Sykes Field. Port St. Joe, I think, has a grass airport out here. 120 public use airports is a gold mine for anybody wanting to move into this area if we have a well-trained workforce, because we have the place, the open range in the water side, even though it's government restricted, but we also have a lot of national parks and state parks. Short of what the hurricane did, we've got a lot of open timberland that you can fly aviation over. Let me pause a minute to make a real stress point about FAA. The FAA controls, monitors, specifies, and certifies all aviation training pipelines. The aviation industry is the second most heavily regulated industry in the country. The FAA specifies exactly what equipment will go into a classroom. It's not low bid. They have a very specific list about what has to be looked at. And on top of that, they inspect the equipment when they come in on their routine visits to ensure it's up to par. They check the teachers. The FAA routinely visits 2 to 4 times a year unannounced. According to Emory Riddle, a global leader in aviation, it would take $1.5 million to set up a basic FAA technician classroom. Doesn't count the building structure. This is just what goes in it. Doesn't count the salary of the teachers. And that's just 15 stations. And to add to that picture, these aren't classrooms you can go line up an English class for. It's not like we can do multiple purposes. These are very dedicated classrooms in terms of their function. We're blessed in the Panhandle to have a couple of programs that are operating very well, and we'll hear about them this week and next week, next month. One of the interesting things I found out on my visit, you can't miss classes. If you're in one of these programs, there are no such thing as excused absence. So when we start talking about putting 18, 19, 20-year-olds who are in love in an FAA classroom where they have to meet 1,200 hours to compete, and there are no such things as excused absence, you've got to really get the kids involved. And part of the way they're recruiting right now is to give them the job market. If the biggest concern right now with parents, and I can see some in here, and you'll probably nod when I say it, is student debt. Whether your kids are in high school or middle school or have escaped college, it's a big issue for you. When you talk about a 95% placement rate for a program when they graduate, that kind of gives a parent and the student a little bit of relief about looking for a job and career path. The placement rate is over 90%, and those who don't get placed generally have just chosen a subset to go into instead of leaving the field. Here's a projection of what I would believe, what I would recommend to the board that we need to look at for the immediate future, because this clock started last year, didn't start this year when we start talking about meeting our needs. In our Triumph service region, we need to produce 300 FAA technicians a year immediately. Right now, we're producing about 100. With these two proposals coming forward, we'll approach 250. With the proposals coming in next month, that will exceed 300. But as soon, and Corey just whispered in my ear that things look good for a company that we talked to before the hurricane, who has big employment numbers, who are interested in coming. We have to be prepared to jump up from 300 to 600. We have to do it in an increment of 450 and then the 600. And remember, it's a 95% placement for jobs that start in at 65 and run up to $120,000. Job security. And then one more piece to add before the question is asked, well, are all these kids going to work in our area? Well, I talked to the folks at the airport here, the Northwest Florida Airport, and he tells me that they have, 200 employees that work at other sites, that there's a thing going on in the aviation business that you find a home place to live and you simply fly out to your work designation, which gives you a chance to deploy to different sites, and it gives your company a chance to put you in different places without doing the whole moving thing. So certainly a contribution to your economy if they're buying houses, raising kids, and doing that, and that they could very well return to the industry here when it expands. And I think it will in Northwest Florida. I don't have permission to say any more than that, but I think the aviation industry is going to expand because we have everything. It's almost like a perfect storm. We've got the ranges to teach flying. We've got lots of national and state forward where we have property that can fly over without risk to urban areas. We've got very skilled people from the military. This is a great program to put in place for military who are exiting, who want to transition into another field going forward. So I think those are projections that the board should consider as far as putting out some projected numbers we need to go at. We have a responsibility to support these industries who've chosen to come and have a workforce, and I think those are pretty good working numbers right now to get us, you know, off the base.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, ma'am.
One thing, and part of the reason why we wanted Frank to make this presentation was the certs that we're talking about when we go forward into the FAA realm are more expensive than the types of certifications that we've looked at before. And Frank can talk to the reason for that, but a lot of it is the equipment and the infrastructure that goes along. But you'll see these numbers are not the normal 3,000, 4,000 per cert numbers that we've looked at before.
Well, to build off yours, these are two-year programs. So technically, when they get in, it's a minimum 2 years because they're hour-based programs, 1,200 hours, 1,000. Anybody here with the FAA? There you go.
You're correct.
You're right. So that's the picture of the manned aviation. But we also have a exploding aviation sector in the Panhandle right now. And honestly, it has a very long history. The very first unmanned aerial high school class took place in the Panhandle in the state of Florida. It was the first one in the state, probably the first one in the nation. The first community college that had a certified UAV program is Gulf Coast State College. So we've got a history, but that doesn't even compare to the military involvement in unmanned in our region. I think I've written it down, but Tyndall's new deployment is with a brand new hybrid drone, a Q9 something. They already have two Raptor units at Eglin, and the Navy's now putting drones on the aircraft carriers. We don't have any ex-Navy pilots here, do we? Because they get that. There you go. They're not happy. You can tell. Unmanned aerial vehicles is the fastest growing single aviation sector of the transportation sector across all boards because of its multiple approaches. And part of what you're going to see in one of the programs today, because the FAA considers a drone an airplane, it treats it like that. It has all the rules, the same sanctions, the same controls. The FAA owns the deployment of the unmanned aerial vehicle market, and they will control it going forward with rules and regulations. We've got some experts in the room in UAV sitting here in the front row, both of them. I would say this, that you're going to see, in my mind, a merger of FAA ground school and private pilot rules with drone flying. And down the road, those two are going to merge, where flying a drone is almost going to be having ground school and private pilot, maybe in a different language, different coverage in place in order to qualify to be deploy a drone over 12 pounds. That's the little one, the little one that we now have in four high schools in the region and training the kids up in drones. So the next step is to get to the larger ones, and some of you may have seen the ones that are out front, which are nowhere near what you would consider what's in the military right now with their deployment. Another issue with the UAV deployment is it's a transitional workforce. It's not about the drone. The drone is simply a platform. If I could give you a simple example, it's just a laptop with nothing on it, not 1 ounce of software, okay? It's got power and a keyboard and a screen. It's all about what's put on the drone to form or do an activity that makes the thing have market value. And the primary reason unmanned aerial vehicles is going to explode, it reduces costs generally 35% to 50% in types of operations they're deploying it. So not only is it a technology, but it's got its own economic driver to push it through almost every career field you can think about could be touched by the applications of going forward. So Florida is a leader in unmanned. Right now, there was a report by Georgetown University back in 2015 that projected 19,000 jobs in the Panhandle for operation of unmanned aerial vehicles. One of the issues that will be addressed today is a transition of military from big drones to smaller drones. There's a transition process because what the FAA certifies is not exactly what the military certifies. So there has to be a bridge, a transition for the military when they exit to learn the skills for FAA to pass the FAA test in order to operate the unmanned vehicle. So I think the market's here, the training package is here, the tools are here, the interest is here, and I think the future is very, very bright for the entire Triumph region in aviation. The nice thing about this is these numbers are so dramatic that they're going to drive themselves. As long as we can keep ourselves aligned and provide the resources, they will drive themselves. We will be able to put programs in place. We will get people into the programs. They will sign up and participate. And because it's FAA regulated, it's got its own quality control component built right into the process. So with that, Mr. Chair, I stand down.
Well, I'd like to ask you and Dr. Harper to reflect on a couple of meetings that you have had recently with ST, which is our largest to date, but not our only engagement with MRO. And if you would, comment on the needs that ST is seeing for airframe technicians and others in order for them to fill their four hangars and get those jobs online, and where all of this that you're talking about today fits into that.
Do you want to go for it? Go ahead, I'll follow you.
In these meetings with ST, it's apparent, even given the time frame for putting the hangars in place for the city of Pensacola, where Triumph has its award dollars, that several years down the road, there's going to be a substantial need for particularly airframe and power plant certified mechanics to work on these planes. And that, as Frank mentioned, these tend to be very high wage jobs, 115% of the county average wage, moving up as they move through the ladder to a much higher wage. ST has a program structure that's very attractive for the regional economy. They anticipate that as the students gain training and gain experience, they have a five-year window over which they would like to maintain these people as their own. But then they anticipate that many of the A&P certified technicians will move out into the airline space, which will enable Northwest Florida, across its several airports that aim to recruit MRO business, it'll offer them a wide and deep pool of labor to draw from. So it looks good. That project itself is bigger than just one or just two counties. That's why the region-wide approach that we will see today in the proposals that are before us is so important. We need labor force and high-touch programs from this employer in all the areas to meet their labor force need, and this will establish the MRO training programs across the region so that Northwest Florida Beaches International Airport can be successful in recruiting similar companies that will also draw from the same training programs. So for the long-term health and stability, to kind of put the golden handcuffs on this company so that they can never consider leaving our region, we need to work diligently over time to ensure that the pipeline is broad enough and deep enough to get them the labor force they need to ensure that even while paying very good salaries that constitute living wages, high wages for their employees, that they understand that it's better here in Northwest Florida. We've already had those sorts of reports from the company that they find that there is a productivity bump at their new facility due to the updating of workplace performance specifications due to innovations that they've undertaken. They're already seeing some of those productivity enhancements that they hoped for that will make them a long-term keeper and provider of good jobs.
Not to speak for ST, but their training model is kind of an apprentice model. So they put you in for 2 to 5 years as you graduate through. The problem is we have immediate demand, because as they scale up, they're looking for market. And they have immediate demand in a market that's red hot, because there's such a compelling issue. When I visited the kids at the Tallahassee, the young adults at the Tallahassee Airport, they already understand they're going to get bids. This is almost like looking at Florida trying to recruit athletes out of Leon High School. I mean, they understand companies are going to come in and say, we'll sign you up 6 months before you graduate, or we'll sign you up with a moving bonus, or we'll sign you up with we'll send your wife to college. So what we hope to do with our support of our group over at Pensacola and any group that came in is we can support their model, but we want to have this regional approach so that there isn't something episodic that happens that would break the chain. We can just shift our emphasis from production area to production area depending on the demands they have. If they get another huge contract, their number could jump significantly, and we have to be prepared for them or any other company to adjust our workforce training to meet those expectations. The good news is, wow, what a great industry to be building a workforce for. With the kind of numbers we're talking about and the kind of sustainability and the kind of long-term impact going forward. And the other good news is we've got some resources and some good systems to put in place to start meeting those needs as quickly as possible. So,
comments or questions for Dr. Fuller, Dr. Harper? We wanted to give you, I apologize for the length, but we wanted to give you a context because you're going to hear much more that fits into the aerospace and aviation workforce training and needs as we go forward the next few months based on the applications that we're starting to see come in. Any comments? Dr. Dane, I know that you had a lot to do with the Whiting Field MRO, and in a different way, but in a lot of similar ways, you got the same issue with the companies that will be outside the gate at Whiting.
Thank you, Chairman. What I can say is that this, in my opinion, this has been a focus, an industry niche that's unique to Northwest Florida. We recognized it when I was working with Governor Bush. You recognized it as the President of the Senate, and it's a long time in coming. I'm clearly convinced we can be a national and global leader in this regard, MRO, and then the auxiliary kind of spill-offs from that. Mm-hmm. But the training part's absolutely key. Mm-hmm. To recognizing or realizing that cluster. I think it also we have a unique opportunity to take a stronghold position, industry position with cybersecurity in Northwest Florida, and even with Homeland Security kind of focus. So I'm thrilled with where we are going to support this industry niche, and I think I'll let it rest at that.
Any other comments? Or yes, sir, Mr. Baer.
The only comment I would make is we need to be mindful of the folks over in Mobile, Alabama. We've got two major companies over there, Airbus and ST. ST's been drawing out of the Pensacola, Northwest Florida area for a great number of years, and now Airbus is hiring their employees away from them. Mm-hmm. So they're constantly trying to fill their pipeline in Mobile before they even need to start with a pipeline in Pensacola. So this is a much bigger workforce need than we realize. These people are just been sucked up as fast as they can get a certificate. And I think we all need to work as hard as we can to try to train people for those jobs, not just over in Escambia County or Santa Rosa, but throughout Northwest Florida.
Further comments? If not, I think you've laid a proper frame for us to consider the proposals that we have on the agenda today, as well as others that may come forward. And Dr. Harper and Dr. Fuller, which ones of these would you like to take up first? You're driving.
Thank you, Chairman. We have three aviation proposals, and then we have four of the Hurricane Michael Disaster Response Training Program proposal. So I would suggest that we take the three aviation aerospace-related proposals first and then follow up with the Hurricane Michael recovery program after that.
Okay. Why don't you proceed with whichever one you want to start with?
The first one to consider is proposal number 210, Gulf Coast State College, Unmanned Aerial Systems Pilot Boot Camp for Exiting Military. This proposal requests a Triumph Award of $3,033,438 to implement a CTE training program in unmanned aerial systems. It's intended to facilitate the transition of separating military into private sector employment in the growing unmanned aerial systems sector. The boot camp will assist separating military members in a 16-week, could be longer or shorter depending on previous experience, boot camp that employs online, face-to-face, and hands-on training and instruction in visual line of sight and beyond visual line of sight pilot qualifications. The face-to-face training will be done at the Gulf Coast State College Port St. Joe campus and other locations as determined by need. The proposal notes that Gulf Coast State College will provide the program again after the initial four-year period if market conditions warrant. We suspect they will. However, staff asked the board to remember that typically when Triumph funds certification programs, we ask that the recipient commit to view Triumph funding as startup funding to put the programs in place that would then enable it to continue at no additional cost to Triumph even after the additional funding award. If Dr. Fuller is correct in thinking that over time unmanned aerial systems and FAA pilot sorts of qualifications will merge to require similar levels of training for all, then it may well be the case that unmanned aerial system expense would rise over time to become closer to that of private pilot or airframe and power plant technician. It does not yet at this point. So that is one area of concern. We would like the board to ask staff to negotiate with Gulf Coast State College to make sure, as we look at contract deliberations, that the program would anticipate continuing after the first iteration. The cost per certificate, Gulf Coast State College projects 800 industry certs earned using this Triumph funding of $3,033,438. Since the application score sheet was constructed, we have received additional communication from Gulf Coast State College, from President Holdnack, with detail and also a letter from the Unmanned Safety Institute committing additional match above and beyond that which was originally identified, so that the proposal today that you have before you, the Gulf Coast State College match of $561,562, has actually increased as a result of Dr. Holdnack's commitment to $781,562 with an additional above and beyond that of $390,000 from their Unmanned Safety Institute partner in this proposal. That does change the match metrics so that Gulf Coast State College is now requesting a Triumph Award that would constitute 72% of total project costs rather than the 84.4% that you see before you. The cost per cert is competitive with others that Triumph has funded. However, given the short proposed term of the program and lack of subsequent commitment, projects staff scored this a B+. If we are able to negotiate an agreement that anticipates continuation to meet the demand that we all agree will be here in the region, and do that at no additional expense for unmanned aerial systems to Triumph, then that score could be adjusted upward.
Are there questions? Mr. Terry, this is your neck of the woods. Any thoughts here?
I come from an aviation family. My father is a retired airline pilot, and my brother currently is a commercial airline pilot. So I am the black sheep in the family. Like you said, we lived in Pensacola and then moved to Port St. Joe, and my dad was able to commute while we lived here. So there is opportunity to retain a lot of the certs that come out of this based on a way of life. Mm-hmm. And that's why we chose to stay here. Having this at Gulf Coast State College, I feel is a tremendous benefit for the community, not only Gulf County, but Franklin County, as well as other surrounding counties that can come and see the great progress that we're doing here. I also see Mike Lawson, who is Skyborne Technology CEO, and he is the one that bought Causton Airfield that has the blimps and drones. So there's a lot of aviation things happening in Gulf County, and I'm really excited for it.
Dr. Dana, were you about to say something, ma'am? Picking up on your points, Corey, I apologize, ma'am. Go ahead.
I just wanted to add that the college is also committed to enroll the students that are being trained, the high school students that are being trained in the region through the Triumph programs as well, will be able to come into the program along with the exiting military.
Okay. I had a couple of points, and I think you've already identified the need for some maturing of the proposal before we take it up as a term sheet. The first question that I would have, and it's possible that Mr. Terry can disabuse me of any concern I have here. When you talk about a boot camp for exiting military and the training location is here, is this a convenient location for exiting military to come to for this training? It seems to me that this may be a little bit outside the center of gravity for exiting military. But where am I missing my points here?
Well, I don't want to speak for the college right now, but I think part of this training could actually be deployed. The trick is to find a location to do it. You could take part of this over to the Bob Sykes Airport if you had a population over there and run the two-week piece that's needed to be done for that group and then come back and relocate. I'm sure we could use the grass field at the...
I'm Jim McKnight. I'm chairman of the Board of Trustees at Gulf Coast State College, so I can address that issue. Right. Clearly, the application speaks to holding the classes where they're the most convenient for the area, and we certainly envision that a lot of those classes would be more to the west of Panama City because of the location of Eglin, Herbert Field, and Tyndall. But clearly, we want to offer those classes here. I want to be able to offer the aerial training here as an asset for our county. And as you've already mentioned, the Unmanned Safety Institute is located at this facility. Our unmanned vehicle program at Gulf Coast State College is moving here. And Skyborne Technology could be a customer. The county's already approved an EDA grant, a DEO grant to build infrastructure in. They approved their building plans for a $3.8 million hangar, literally less than a mile from here. And they're in the airship and drone business. That's still prospective. It's not done yet, but we're moving that direction. So clearly, Gulf County's all in with this project. The college is in, and I'm sure we can work out the details in terms of continuation and holding classes in the appropriate location.
So you would see the headquarters of the program to be here, but you might see the actual training sites to be wherever the exiting military find it convenient to be, and where the facilities are, be it Bob Sykes Airport or
Walmart. It'd be my best guess that most classes would be Panama City and West. I mean, that's just my guess.
Okay.
I'm not the president of the college, but I mean, it just makes sense. There's you people are transitioning; they live there. We heard from the colonel at Tyndall the other day that they give them 6 months. They pay them 6 months to go get training. So I think this is a perfect program for people transitioning out of the military to get in this program because they can do it in that 6 month period and they're ready to go. $55,000 a year is a good starting salary. Average salary is $83,000. We're excited. And then I think the other point y'all made, it's a wraparound program to something you've already paid for. You've already paid for these high school kids to be getting that first set of certifications. They won't have to do that. They're eligible to be in the camp, and you've got those programs at Wakulla, Franklin and Gulf County. So, yeah, there will be some taught here because we want to teach our high school kids and some transitioning. We're not very far from Tyndall. So, but I think that clearly the classes will be where they need to be. And it's a great program for us in Gulf County. It's a great program for the region. And as you know, we're probably the poorest county when you look at median household income and other things. And $55,000 is 2.5 times what our median income is in this county. So we look forward to these kind of jobs.
Thank you very much for that clarification. The other two points that I'm concerned about just as one member of the board are the ones that you articulated in your description. One is making sure that we have the same kind of commitment in this workforce training program that we have requested and obtained from everyone else. And that is that we will have a continued effort commitment beyond the initial startup phase. And I'd have to see that to vote yes on a term sheet. The second thing is, maybe I misunderstood this, but are we suggesting that contrary to the way that we typically look at matching funds, where not in all cases, but in nearly all cases, we find ourselves getting 50% or better matching funds, that here we're only going to be getting 28% matching funds? Is that correct?
That's my calculation, Mr. Chairman.
I would encourage you to talk with Gulf Coast State College about that number, because I think that, every deal has to be looked at as its own deal and its own value. And I think you've already made the point that the infrastructure, the training infrastructure, the equipment that's necessary for much of this training is more costly than what we might do in other fields of workforce training. But also, we've looked for and received better matching funds for programs much like this in other projects that we've done. I'll have a little bit of a hard time with 72% of the money coming from Triumph, where with other applicants who have very important and expensive projects, we've insisted that the Triumph be more like a 28, 30, 35% contributor. So I leave all those negotiations to you and to council, but just, one vote. When the matter comes up for a term sheet, I want to see a little more skin in the game.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Going back to your question about the military and where we're centrally located, over the past probably 10 years, we've seen an influx of military families move to our area in lieu of going to Parker, Callaway, Lynn Haven, Southport, and other areas. We're seeing them in Mexico Beach, Port St. Joe, and they're becoming a very valuable part of our community. With the destruction in Mexico Beach and rebuilding, I would assume that we would still see that as Tyndall rebuilds, whenever that might be. But I do want to reiterate how important the military is to this community. And I feel that with this, if we do propose to go through, that we really need to look at our educational programs K-12, because military really want a strong education and for their children. And we just got to make sure that we're the right fit for them. On another note, I think that the average retiree for military active duty is like 42, if I'm not mistaken. So that would leave them another 20 years in this industry once retirement ends. They did the 60 over 60. So that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Lee.
Comments were, and going back to what comments out of Ms. Henderson's report, and I would like to see if there's a way for us to fold this into this project, but also training military spouses with this type project.
That's a great idea.
I read in the project where it is forecast companies such as Amazon, Google, Boeing and Verizon are utilizing this, and I know that Verizon made a large announcement in Panama City a few weeks back that they would be one of the first major companies to prioritize hiring military spouses. So if there's a way that we can fold that in, and I think that also gets us up on the grading scale of the base evaluations if and when BRAC does come back around, that I think it, to parlay on Mr. Terry's comments, K through 12 is going to be 20% of the grade, and also military, how jobs readily available to military spouses is also going to be a major impact. I'd like to see that as part of this project.
Very good. I think staff has has good direction from the board as to how we might continue to mature and improve this project before it comes back for a term sheet. If it is the board's desire, we could consider a conceptual approval of this project at this time, a first-tier approval, subject to the negotiation of a term sheet that includes the issues that that have been raised in the discussion here. If anyone cares to move it, it would be in order to move conceptual approval of proposal 210. Mr. Bear moves. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Terry. Is there a debate or discussion? Is there any member of the public who would like to speak for or against conceptual approval of this project, or to provide information that you think the board might find useful as we consider the matter? Would the applicant care to offer any other thoughts?
I would just say I think your requests are reasonable. We'll work on it. Maybe we need to approach some of those companies that are going to benefit from this in terms of putting some skins in the game to help us with the project. That might be one way to get where we got. But clearly this is something that's important to Gulf County. I mean, and especially, we have rural kids that they live in Paradise. They grew up in Paradise, and they have to leave Paradise because there's no good jobs here. You've already approved our nursing program in a past meeting, which will allow more of them to make the income necessary to remain in this area. This could be another endeavor that allows our kids to grow up here and have a good job and not have to move off for 30 years, make their income, and move back to Paradise. So we'd appreciate anything you can do in your consideration, and we will certainly try to work out the terms with you and the staff.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Any other comments from any member of the public? Any public comment? Yes, sir, please come forward. Could you please come forward, just because you're on statewide television and we want your voice to ring out from Key West to Pensacola. And if you could identify yourself, sir.
Lawson, Skyborne Technology. This is really an answer to prayer because, anytime you invest money in a community, you always worry about the workforce. And there's one thing to build an airship. There's one thing to integrate all the systems. But the ingredient, you have to have pilots. You have to have people that are qualified in the safety area. Need AP mechanics. So if this is a program that I see is very solid for our company, it answers a prayer of need. That's it.
Thank you very much for your comments, sir.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Anyone else care to comment? If not, we have a motion before the board. Is there a further debate or discussion? If not, please call a roll.
Mr. Bear?
Yes.
Dr. Dana?
Yes.
Chair Gates?
Yes.
Mr. Lee?
Yes.
Mr. Terry?
Yes.
5-0.
Showed adopted as described. And now, Dr. Harper, did you want to go forward with Proposal 215?
Thank you, Chairman. Proposal 215 is the Wakulla County School Board, through its Lively Technical College, requests a triumph award of $2,940,000 to support activities at the Lively Training Facility at Tallahassee Regional Airport. This program prepares students for employment as an aviation maintenance general technician and as an aviation power plant maintenance technician. The summary table provided in the proposal identifies 1,132 certs to be awarded over 10 years of the program. The Triumph funds are proposed to be dispersed in level annual increments of $420,000 over the initial 7 years of the program. The proposal notes that the district will provide $560,000 in match in level annual increments of $56,000 over the 10-year period of the proposed Triumph Award. That match represents 16% of the calculated project expenditures. And in looking, so the funding would be used to purchase equipment, electronics, curriculum, hire staff to support the increased enrollment and certifications. And Triumph staff note that first, that the proposed training program location in Leon County at the airport is outside the Triumph counties, and we would need to have board clarification as to whether that is an award that is a proposal that is eligible for a Triumph Award. Staff note further that the quote current staffing unquote that is listed in the proposal as match by the school board is perhaps not appropriate to consider as match for Triumph program funding because those people are already on staff. And so given the extraordinary expense of administering airframe and power plant technician programs, the lengthy seat time, as Dr. Fuller has noted, the number of certifications that are required to get to the ANP designation, we view the $2,597 per cert as good value for money should the program be allowable using its location at the Tallahassee Airport. Staff calculates that this program would lead to an expected gain of $27 in household income, appropriately discounted, per dollar of Triumph spending. That is the proposal, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. So,
yes, ma'am.
As it relates to the location in Tallahassee, Lively Technical Center services Wakulla and Franklin counties, and rather than recreate the training facility in those counties, the application is to use the facilities that already exist at Tallahassee Airport and transport the students from Wakulla and Franklin to the program at that location.
Council, have you had the opportunity to look at the question of whether or not we find ourselves outside of our statutory scope geographically, or do you accept, I certainly do, Ms. Skelton's description, and that is we're training Wakulla County students, but we're training them at a facility outside the county line for reasons of economies of scale?
I have looked at it briefly, and I concur with Ms. Skelton and with your analysis that we're spending the money at the institution in Wakulla County, and the fact that some of the training or all the training takes place outside of the county is irrelevant as it pertains to those students.
All right.
One other comment we could make, Mr. Chairman, is it's the facility here that has the value. This is set up to teach FAA. It's FAA approved. It's FAA equipment based. It's FAA certified. It's FAA visited. If we were to try to come up and create that own structure ourselves, it's about 1.8 just to put the stuff in the building, if you could find a building, and if you could get FAA to certify the building, which would take probably 24 months. So part of their contribution, and I don't really know how to structure this in an accountant term, is in this expansion, we either build off what we have, which are the FAA certified centers we have, or we have to start looking at creating our own. Considering the demand is so compelling, it appears that a good solution is to build off what we have and allow them to enrich it, and then try to see what the next two steps are in production. If we can get to these numbers we talk about, 300 and 450 and 600, we can start looking at other options that would be more in the construction world. And the reason I say that, I'm not anxious to get in the construction business, but it's all shifting to simulation now. When I worked for Emmy Riddle, a commercial airline pilot did not get into a 747 until his last 6 months at the university. They were in simulators for 2.5 years before they ever stepped foot in a plane that they were going to fly commercially. And that's exactly how it's shifting. So my concern is if we start getting into the appropriate labs, that we prepare ourselves to move to the transition of simulations in our training and not try to build an old lab just to read a new problem. So that's a long way of saying we're just trying to capitalize on the material and equipment they have there. It is effectively as we can to get as many kids through the portal as we can to reach our 300 number.
Are there comments or questions on this proposal? Dr. Harper.
Mr. Chairman, might I suggest that if the enrollees are restricted to residents of the eight counties, that that would go a long way towards bridging the gap, even though the program is offered at a facility that already exists outside the region?
That certainly would. It certainly would. Other comments or questions?
I think.
Yes, sir, Mr. Lee.
We follow, you know, the definition of what an in-state student is and an out-of-state student is pretty strict in today's world. As long as we're following the rules that the state outlines for defining where the student hails from, I think would be satisfactory to me to get me comfortable on it.
Okay. Yes, sir. Mr. Baer.
My concern is that, as yours was on the last discussion, that we're providing 84% of the funds.
The easiest way to say it is we're gaining access to $8.5 million worth of classroom. So I don't know. I don't know how to do that in the accounting world, but we cannot replicate this model by creating our own classroom without spending upwards of $12 million.
And additionally, this location
saying we should include that $8 million worth of facility as part of the match?
I can assure you I'm not an accountant. Anybody that knows me will tell you that. But what we're getting out of this is actually access to the facility to produce what we desperately need. And that's what we're really getting after. So I don't know how to deal with the contribution part. I do know that it will give us the numbers in the next 2 years that we need to meet our demand for the workforce.
Well, I'll defer to, all of those who took far higher economics courses and accounting courses than I did, which would be everyone in the room. I had a tough time getting through Paul Samuelson's first initial textbook. But it would seem to me that if you have the use of equipment, which otherwise you would have to buy, you in effect have a rental value or a lease value or a use value. Now, I'm looking over here at Tipton Marler, and I'm trying to see if whether there's a smile or a smirk about that analysis. Do you have any comment you might want to make to that?
I have made some notes, and I will look and consult with legal counsel on the extent of what we can use that for match funds.
All right. You know, we're not. I don't think we want to try to manufacture, funny money here. I think we want to find out if there is a way that we can legitimately calculate value received for the use of equipment that we would otherwise have to buy. And remembering that that whenever we make a decision like this, then we own that decision, and that becomes the new floor and ceiling. So Tip DeMarlo will look at this and consult with attorneys. But I get back to Mr. Baer's comment as well. After we do that, Lively Technical Institute is a going concern. And they are a joint venture of sorts between Wakulla and Leon County. And I would simply point out that this is we're going to want to look at how the values of matching funds really shake out here. But my two questions are, first, are we paying for these certs after we get them, or are we paying for these certs before we get them?
We're paying for the startup approach. We have to get some things in the building and some people hired, and then we start paying per cert. But the original, I think, two expenditures are to try to get some equipment and things into the building to upgrade.
So is that year one, or is that further along than year one?
The cert part?
If it's $400,000 a year, is the first $400,000 startup money,
yes.
And after that we're paying by the cert, and we anticipate it's about $400,000 a year, but it could be less or it could be more depending upon output. How is it structured?
Was that a multiple choice?
Well, how is it structured?
It's my understanding that, and I could defer, we have somebody here from Wakulla to answer, but my understanding was its first 2 years would be getting the startup in place, and then we start paying per cert.
Good afternoon. I'm Sunny Chansey, Chief Academic Officer of Wakulla County Schools. And with the startup funds, it's an annual $400,000. So the certs are going to be per year. So when you look at the way that the graph or the chart is situated, we are going to do ground school, space tech, and AMP certifications with our students through Lively Tech, a certain amount of certs every year. But with that comes the cost of the instructor for those different with the increased enrollment, because right now we have a very low enrollment for Wakulla County students in Lively Tech, so we're increasing that. And part of the reason, and I don't mean to regress, but part of the reason is because when Mr. Terry was talking about the former commercial pilot, we employed a former commercial pilot to teach the aviation program that was funded by Triumph Gulf Coast. That has generated an enormous amount of interest in the aviation community with regard to these extra certs, which is another reason we're coming around. In addition, I just want to address the comments that were made about students going to the airport. We do enroll our students at Lively Tech at their facility all the time. We do it for aviation, we do it for HVAC, we do it for culinary, we do it, so it's not uncommon. Another piece of information on that is with our upload to DOE, when we register our certifications, they had to specifically put Lively Tech as our school for career and technical certifications because it was outside the district line. So within our district, we didn't have a technical school to serve us, but statutorily they serve Gadsden, Franklin, Leon, and Wakulla. So our students that go there, in order for us to be reporting those students correctly, they had to add that, and that just happened 2 years ago. So they're very aware that we go outside county lines for our enrollment.
I have an answer.
Yes, sir.
I actually looked it up. You're starting year three, we pay on certs.
Okay. So that's what I was – I appreciated that background, but – You are reconciled to what Dr. Fuller said, that
yes.
In year three, if you produce fewer certs, you will get less money.
Yes.
You will not get $400,000 come rain or shine. You will get $400,000 based on production.
We're going to produce. It'll be
okay,
fine.
But you understand that and you acknowledge that.
Yes.
Okay.
Year three.
Year three and year four.
Understood.
Okay. And the continuing commitment,
is based on certs every year after that.
Okay. So there's a 7-year commitment beyond that.
Well, for them, and then for you paying certs, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there questions? Yes, sir, Mr. Terry.
Yes, I see in here transportation. Is that going to be funded by Triumph?
I think it's a state law that we have to bus them to these services.
It is, and that's new. I want to say that came out last year, that we are required to transport the students if they can't transport themselves.
What about liability with Triumph Gulf Coast if there's an accident? And we're funding that. Do you know, Ms. Remington?
I don't think we're taking responsibility for actually transporting the students. They'd be transported by the
correct
the educational institutions, and so they'd be protected by insurance and sovereign immunity.
So we're paying the cost of the transportation, but we are not the transporter. Is that correct? Ma'am, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And we'll confirm that in the documents as well.
Okay. I'm sorry, Dr. Dana.
Thank you, Chairman. So I see on the support letters, there's four letters insofar in support of the proposal, but they're from summer of 2018.
Yes, the turnaround for the proposal to get the final application in was rather quick, and so we're generating new updated letters that we can send to you in addition to the County Commission acceptance, which went on the March meeting, which is March 16th. So we don't have that for Wakulla County at this time either, but we will send those documentation or those documents to Ms. Henderson.
Thank you. Any further questions for the applicant?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. And we certainly have been enjoyed working with you on other projects and appreciate the good work that Wakulla County School District is doing.
Okay.
Any other comments on this project? Yes, ma'am? Yes, we're going to go there. Any member of the public wish to speak for or against this project or to provide information? Any public member? We are delighted to have public comment, and we're all among friends, so anything you might have to say, we're anxious to hear it.
Mr. Chairman, the one thing I would want to point out is just that this application would also be open to Franklin County students, even though Wakulla County is handling it, because it'll be a lively. But Franklin would have to bear the cost of that.
Well, let's stop for a second. What do you mean Franklin would bear the cost? They would bear the cost by paying a unit cost to participate or simply a transportation cost?
I would think that they would be responsible for their transportation. I don't think Wakulla County can transport Franklin County students. So.
Sonny, are you still here?
I am. I was shaking my head back there. But
okay. Here, the question arises, do you now have or do you contemplate a joint use agreement whereby Franklin County students would be able to participate in this program, and have you contemplated how you would do cost sharing?
Yes, because we have the controlled open enrollment that the school choice, several Franklin County kids actually transport to the county line right there in Franklin County, and we pick them up there with our transportation and they attend our schools. If that's the case, those kids will then be able to pay or to go to Lively. We do not at this time have an agreement with Franklin County to merge into Carabel and the area where the Franklin County K-12 system is and bring them out. We meet them at the county line. It's not something, if they're willing, it is a possibility, but it would be a discussion between their district and ours.
Yeah, well, that's way over our pay grade. We're just wondering whether or not there's some additional value for Franklin County.
We would love to have Franklin County kids in transport. We absolutely would, and we can initiate those conversations.
Okay. Before we go to a motion, then, is there any other comment or questions? Yes, sir, Mr. Lee.
From a economic and dollar tracking standpoint, would the Franklin County, if Franklin County kids did participate in this, would that be considered a Franklin County grant towards tracking on back to our spreadsheet, or is this strictly a Wakulla?
It completely depends on how the application or their grant award agreement is written. At this point, it's just written solely with the Wakulla County School Board. So I think it would count 100% toward Wakulla, but if it were a joint application or if Franklin County were joined as a signator, then we could potentially separate that out and make some sort of pro-rata distribution of the funds or credit for the funds.
Is that needed?
So I think it's up to the board if they want to see it.
Okay.
But if it's a direction to staff to work with Wakulla and Franklin County to see how we might be able to incorporate them into this agreement to accurately reflect the relationship between the counties, we're happy to take that up.
I think it would be good just to see it.
Okay. We have a couple of things then that have been mentioned here that without objection would be explicit in any motion to provide conceptual approval. One is the proviso that Mr. Lee just indicated having to do with the involvement or potential involvement of Wakulla County. Second would be the ascertainment of any matching fund value for the use of equipment. in order to give a more accurate picture of the other side of the equation, other than Triumph dollars. And third would be an explicit undertaking in the term sheet, just as we've had with other training programs, of a continuing 7-year commitment. Is there anything else that you would want included? If not, having heard public comment, a motion would be in order to provide initial conceptual approval to Proposal 215 with the additional provisos that were just articulated. Is there such a motion? Moved by Dr. Dana. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Baer. Is there debate or discussion? If not, please call the roll.
Mr. Baer?
Yes.
Dr. Dana?
Yes.
Chair Gates?
Yes.
Mr. Lee?
Yes.
Mr. Terry?
Yes.
5-0.
Okay. In these two areas, both proposals 210 and 215, there's some work that needs to be done cooperatively with the applicants. We're not quite ready for prime time yet on either one of them. Dr. Harper, you're up.
Next proposal. The next proposal on the agenda is Proposal 216, Northwest Florida State College Aviation Center of Excellence is requesting a Triumph award of $8,782,065 to be paid over 7 years to establish and implement an aviation center of excellence focused on meeting demand for airframe and power plant technicians and commercial pilots. The proposal specifies that by 2030, a minimum of 1,255 industry-recognized certifications will have been awarded in these areas. This represents a cost to Triumph of $6,998 per cert. The proposal specifies that Northwest Florida State College Partner Match will provide $4,300,000 in the first year of the project, in the same year that it is proposed that Triumph provide $2,109,861. Using these funds, the Northwest Florida State College will renovate an existing 25,000 square foot building located on the northwest corner of the Bob Sykes Airfield in Crestview. In subsequent years, from FY 2020 until FY 2029, student tuition and fees are projected to provide a total of $4,697,666, and Career and Professional Education Act, CAPAC funds, are projected to provide $310,500. On top of the funds already mentioned, Northwest Florida State College commits to provide $870,087 in funding over that same time. Thus, the proposed Triumph funding of $8.78 million represents 46.3% of total project expenditures. Given the high number of contact hours per cert that are needed in these programs, the cost per cert is competitive with others that Triumph has funded. Staff note that the proposed match provided by Northwest Florida State College from its own funds for this program of instruction are somewhat low at 4.6% of total project funding. At a reimbursement rate of $6,998 per certification, the discounted total increase in household incomes expected from the project will be $11 per dollar of Triumph cost, which is high but still competitive with other Triumph CTE awards. Staff concerns noted above notwithstanding, staff rate this program A- in terms of economic impact, largely given the extraordinary expense of airframe and power plant training. And as we note, the CAPE bonus funds reimbursement are expected to be $310,500. It's expensive to provide this training. Therefore, staff rate the program an A-.
Questions? Questions. We're deep into aviation and aerospace today, as Dr. Fuller predicted we would be. But any other comments or questions in general or as to this proposal? If not, Dr. Stevenson, did you have any comments you might want to make, or anybody representing Northwest Florida State College? And welcome. It's good to see you.
Good to see you, Chairman Gates. And let me say before I make any remarks specifically to the board that I prepared, this financial opportunity for our institution is a game changer, and one in the over 60 years that we've existed has never happened. So I want to thank you all for your due diligence in the work that you're doing. I'll sit here and listen to how circumspectly that you investigate all these proposals and make sure they're what they should be. So thank you for that, and thank you for the opportunity to be in front of you today to share very briefly. At this point in our history, we are laser-focused on career education and workforce development to meet business and industry needs, as well as position this region for quality growth. Our original project, you may remember, was the Triumph Trifecta. It was submitted about 2 years ago. And with Dr. Fuller's helpful guidance, we've worked to respond to this board's priorities and to your goals with the establishment of this Aviation Center of Excellence at the Bob Sykes Airport. This project will provide FAA industry-recognized certifications in airframe, power plant mechanics, and professional pilot technology. We do want to extend our sincere thanks to Dr. Paul Hsu, who has championed this project and supported it with a build-to-suit lease at the Crestview Technology Airport to meet the program's distinct program needs. In addition, the Okaloosa Aviation Board has supported the project with a parking lot facility at the tune of $625,000. Career Source, Okaloosa, and Walton stands ready to assist with linking employers and job seekers. I also must take a very brief moment to thank Nathan Sparks, the Executive Director of the Economic Development Council of Okaloosa County, who's here with us today to show his support for this project. It's also good to see Jane Evans, the Grant Development Director for Okaloosa Board of Commission. This morning, the Board of Commissioners of Okaloosa County unanimously endorsed this project on the college's behalf. Our institution is a partner committed to enhancing workforce, economic, and community development opportunities in Northwest Florida. We do sincerely appreciate your consideration and support of the Aviation Center of Excellence and stand prepared to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. President. We will take a brief break right now and then come back and take out this proposal, and there are, I'm sure, going to be comments and questions that we would have, but we will stand in recess for 10 minutes.